It's in Amarillo. And, you know, they were holding the door open, literally. So I come moving pretty fast, you know, through that terminal, and this guy, the gate agent, was on the microphone. He said, "Run, Forrest, run." You know, how many of y'all knew Zig Ziglar? Anybody know him? He told a story one time about this preacher had had a long day, and he was going back home, and it was after dark, getting dusky dark. And he said he looked in his rearview mirror, and he saw these red and blue lights coming. And he thought, "Oh no!" So he pulls over, and he says, "Highway patrolman comes up and said, 'Sir,' he said, 'Did you have some reason for going a little fast? You're going a little fast.'" He said, "Well, I'm a man of the cloth." He said, "I've had a pretty long day. Just wasn't paying attention, I guess." He said, "Well, what's that on the seat there? What's in that jar?" And he said, "That's water." He said, "Let me see that." He took it off. He said, "Man, that's wine." He said, "Doggone, he's done it again." Well, I'll invite your attention to the Book of Ruth. Last week we got Ruth down from the house of bread, which is Bethlehem, down into God's washpot, God's garbage can, which is the land of Moab. And we had some joys, we had some sorrows down there, didn't we? There was a couple of weddings, joyful times, but then there were three funerals that took place down there. And now we have three widows down in the land of Moab. And that's sort of where we left them, didn't we? But before we go full bore into that, and by the way, the Book of Ruth is the only one of two books in the Bible named after a woman. What's the other? The Book of Esther. That's right. So we find the setting of the Book of Ruth right in the middle of the period of Judges. Lynn was talking about Gideon as he was praying. And right after that time, between Gideon and Jephthah, was about the time that the story of Ruth took place. Remember, we said that some people have called Joshua, Judges, and Ruth the good, the bad, and the lovely. And the book of Judges was the bad. It was characterized by one statement, and that is, every man did that which was right in his own eyes. And you know, you hear that a lot of times today, especially young people say, "Well, what does it matter what I do as long as it doesn't affect anybody else?" But Romans 10:14 says that nobody lives to themselves and nobody dies to themselves. And whatever you do, it will affect somebody else. You know, in the Ten Commandments, we go back to Exodus chapter 20, and God says that He would visit the sin of the fathers on the children under the third and fourth generation, meaning that what the fathers did affects the children, and it affects the grandchildren, and it affects the great-grandchildren. You know, that's wrong, that's false, when it talks about that we can live as we please. Somebody talks about living as they please and not affecting anybody. You're going to affect somebody. I mean, even if it's somebody that cares about you, you're going to affect them. Children, their sins affect the parents, don't they? Parents' sins affect the children. So, at any rate, that was the period of the Judges. We won't go into all of that. I gave you some little notes there, and I don't follow a script, as you probably saw last Sunday. So, anyhow, by the way, there's an error in the one I gave you today. If you'll look down in Exodus 16 and verse 23, make that 15. I looked up and looked at the wrong chapter heading up there. And yeah, you'll see it on there somewhere when we come to it. That's the one that talks about Israel being led through the wilderness, and they came to some bitter water, water of Marah. We'll talk about that in a little bit. But let's pick up the story again here in Ruth chapter 1. So we left off with verse 6, and Naomi, who is the mother, and she's an older woman now. Her two sons are gone. They both died. Her husband died. She left all of her memories there in a graveyard in Moab. And now the famine that caused them to go to Moab is over. And so she tells her two widowed daughter-in-laws, Orpah and Ruth. She said, you girls need to go on back to your mother's house. And you're young. And you need to get married again. And so, as she was talking with them along the way, she says in verse 8, the Lord deal kindly with you as you've dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband, that you'll find a new husband and you'll be happy and you've got my blessings. And she kissed them and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, surely we will return with thee unto thy people. And then Naomi said, no, girls, said that won't work. She said, suppose that even today I had a husband. She said, first of all, it wouldn't do any good. I'm too old to have any more children. Now, we talked about some laws in Israel, and they had some peculiar laws to us. One of them was the brother-in-law law. That was a means whereby that the land which God gave to Abraham and his descendants forever, that after Joshua allotted that territory, that it could remain in the family, and it was a means by which if a young lady had married an Israelite and he died, and there were two brothers that had been living and managing the estate together, then the law said, in order for her not to lose her part of her husband's estate and his name be kept alive in Israel, then the brother-in-law could marry the dead brother's widow, and that he could have a child by her. She had to be childless in order to qualify for this provision of the law. And then, therefore, the child which would be born would, at the estate that belonged to the brother that died, would be passed on to that child. That was a means by which that was given for that to take place. Now, Naomi said, I'm too old for you to use the brother-in-law law. She said, first of all, I'm past childbearing day, my days of childbearing are over. Anybody relate to that? And so she said, it won't do me any good. And she said, furthermore, even if I could have children, what would you do? Wait 20 years until that they could become marrying age? She said, that just won't work. And then besides that, she knew that Moabites might not be looked on real kindly in Israel. Today, we look a little bit sideways and with under narrowed eyelids at people that come from Jordan and from Syria and some of those countries like that, don't we? And so, actually, Moab was the land of Jordan. Today is modern-day Jordan. That was the land of Moab. And it says, there was part of the law that says that no Moabite could enter the congregation of the Lord until the 10th generation. So, Naomi was afraid that Ruth and Orpah might be, being Moabite girls, they might be discriminated against in the land of Israel. That they might be looked upon as second rate. And so she didn't say this, but I know this was no doubt in her mind that they might have been stigmatized. She said, nay, my daughters, verse 13, it grieves me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Well, they lifted up their voice and wept again, and Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. Now, both girls were given a door of opportunity. They couldn't have come and accepted the God of Israel and become an Israelite. And Orpah walked right up to the door, and then she turned back. But not Ruth. What does it say about Ruth? It says that she cleaved unto her mother-in-law and said, behold, thy sister-in-law, Naomi said, your sister-in-law has gone back into her people and unto her gods. Go back with her. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee. Here's a classic verse. Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee, for whither thou goest, I will go. And whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God, my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also if aught but death parts thee and me. And right then and there, Ruth decided, she made a conscious decision that she would put her trust in the God of Israel. How do I know that? Because when I look over a verse in chapter number 3, and verse number 19, it says, the Lord, Boaz is talking about how that her fame had gone out and people had been talking how that it had been told how the Lord had, that you'd come to trust in the Lord and that under His wings you have come to trust. Now Psalm chapter 91 and verse number 1 tells us about the secret of surviving in any day and any time. What does that chapter say? It talks about he that dwelleth in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. That's how Joseph survived when they pulled him out of the pit and they took him down into Egypt. That's how he survived being lied on by Potiphar's wife. That's how he survived prison. That's how people survive tough times. What is that secret? He that dwells in the secret place of the Most High God. You know what that means? The Most High God is the God who owns everything. And he that dwells in the secret place of the Most High God under the shadow of the Almighty. That tells us under the shelter of the Almighty that that's the God who provides everything. And then look at verse number 4. He shall cover them, he shall cover thee with his feathers, and under his wings shalt thou trust. And Ruth had come to place her faith and trust under the wings of the Most High God, the Almighty. When I was a little boy, we used to sing a song. It was written by Ira Sankey. Do you know who Ira Sankey is? He was D.L. Moody's song leader. Ira Sankey is the one who wrote the Natty and Nan. Anybody ever hear that song? Well, he wrote this song. Under his wings I am safely abiding, though the night deepens and tempests are wild. Still he will keep me, I know he will keep me. He has redeemed me, and I am his child. You ever hear that song? Yeah. Under his wings, who from his love can sever? Under his wings my soul shall abide, safely abide forever. That's where that song came from. It came from Ruth's testimony. It came from Psalm chapter 91. And so Ruth came to place her trust in the God of Israel, the God of her mother-in-law. And Naomi, when she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. And so these two, they too went until they came to Bethlehem. Now it's easy for us to pass over that. But let me tell you, Moab was about 1,000 feet above sea level. And you had to go down out of the land of Moab and down through the regions of the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is the lowest place on the face of the earth. It is 1,275 feet below sea level. You're going from 1,000 feet above to 1,275 feet below. That's 2,375 feet. You're making a distance down. And then you got to go up into the Hebron mountain range over on the Israel side. And those mountains are about 3,000 feet high. And then Bethlehem is 2,500 feet above sea level. Actually, the Dead Sea is 1,275 feet above the Mediterranean Sea. It's lower than that. It's about 1,300 and something feet as far as its absolute depth. You know, some people, they say, are like the Dead Sea. They're all take, no give. The Dead Sea, everything flows into it. The Jordan and all the watersheds flow into it, but nothing flows out of it because it's the lowest place on earth. Well, anyway, this was a man-killing trip for two women that were probably walking on foot. Can you imagine making that trip? down that elevation on the Moab side, down into the valley of the rift of the Dead Sea in the old the Aruba, what's called the Araba, which is the dry bed of the Jordan that at one time was the other end of the Jordan that flowed down into the Arabian Gulf. But now the Dead Sea is lower than all. Why did the Dead Sea become lower than all the rest of it? Why did the water quit flowing down to the Gulf? Well, because God came down and visited the cities of the plain back in Genesis 19, and He didn't like what He saw. And He zapped those cities. They became nothing but a pile of ash. And where is Sodom and Gomorrah today? They're probably down below the bottom of the Dead Sea. I mean, this is what probably happened to them. So at any rate, they make this long, arduous trip, this man-killing. It'd be a hard trip to make in a car, in an automobile, wouldn't it? But can you imagine these two women? So they went till they came to Bethlehem, and it came to pass when they were come to Bethlehem that all the city was moved about them, and they said, "Is this Naomi?" She said, "Don't call me Naomi anymore. That name means sweetness, but I don't feel very sweet. I went out full, but I came back empty. Just call me Mara, which means bitterness." Now, I told you a moment ago about bitterness. That's where that, in that notes, that's where that is wrong. It should be Exodus 15. Back in Exodus 15, when God was leading the children of Israel, they had come out of Egypt. Man, it was a happy day. They weren't going to be slaves anymore. And their daughters weren't going to be playthings for Egyptian men anymore. And what a day it was going to be. But then, their freedom kind of turned sour once they got out there in the wilderness, didn't it? And they were in the wilderness and they didn't have any water to drink. And the only water hole they could find was bitter water. Did you ever come on bad water? Anybody ever could live out in West Texas, anywhere like that? You ever had bad water out there? You couldn't drink it. Alkaline water. And so that water was bitter. But God told Moses, and they called it the waters of Marah because it was bitter. God told Moses, "You cut down a tree and you throw that tree in the water and the waters will become sweet again." Now, isn't that a picture of what happened on Calvary? Because life was bitter. It had been made bitter by sin, hadn't it? But God had a tree that was cut down and planted on that hill called Golgotha. And that tree has turned our lives from bitterness into sweetness, hasn't it? That's a wonderful picture of that. Paul Rader was the first radio evangelist in the 1920s. He was out of Chicago. He actually pastored the Moody Memorial Church from about 1915 during the World War I days to about 1921 or so. And Paul Rader, he wrote a song that I'm sure many of you know at least the chorus of it. You may not know the verse of it, but it goes, "Fear not, little flock. From the cross to the throne, from death unto life, he went for his own. All power in earth, all power above is given to him for the flock of his love." And then that second verse says, "Fear not, little flock. He goeth ahead, your shepherd selecteth the path that you tread." And then here's the part. "The waters of Marah he'll sweeten for thee. He drank all the bitter at Gethsemane." Now you know the chorus on that, don't you? Sing it with me. "Only believe." You know that. "Only believe. All things are possible. Only believe. Only believe. Only believe. All things are possible. Only believe." You ever heard that song? I know you have. Well, those are the waters of Marah, and Naomi took that word from back in the book of Exodus and said, "Just call me Marah. Call me bitter, because my life is it's just not the same anymore. I'm empty." So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabite is her daughter-in-law with her. which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem. And wouldn't you have it, the timing was just right. It was in the beginning of barley harvest. Now, there were two kinds of grains that were harvested. The barley started poking its head up first, and then the wheat came a little bit later afterwards. Now, at the beginning of the barley harvest, the high priest would go out and he would take sheaves, the first fruits, and he'd wave them as an offering before the Lord. And you know what those first fruits represent? Christ is the first fruits, and afterward they that are His at His coming. And so it represents the resurrection of Jesus Christ, the first fruits. And then that's a pledge that those that come after will be like Him, and that we'll be raised and rise again just like He did. Well, at the end of the harvest in June, when the wheat had all be gathered in, that's when they had the Feast of Pentecost. And they would make two loaves of bread, and they would offer them as offerings before the Lord and thank Him for the abundant harvest. Then they would have a fall harvest when they would have another feast later on in the year. So this was the beginning of the barley harvest. Now Naomi had a kinsman of her husband's, a mighty man of wealth of the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Now Ruth says, "Mother-in-law, I'm going to go glean in the fields, because the law provides that I can glean in the fields and I can get some grain for both of us so that we can make bread and that we can eat." Now, Ruth went out there to glean. And it's true, the law back in Leviticus, the program is that you were to leave the gleanings of your field. Get the harvest in, but leave the leavings, because those are for the poor of the land. You see, they didn't believe in government welfare back then. You weren't on a welfare program. It was private benevolence. That's what took care of the poor. And it worked. The system worked. And so Ruth, she goes into a field, and it says in verse 3 that her happenstance, it so happened that she came to a part of the field that belonged to Boaz. Now, do you believe there's any accidents in life? No. God was taking... He was taking care of matters, wasn't He? And I imagine that, how did Ruth probably decide which field was right? She didn't have any idea what field to go into. She probably looked over this field and she said, "Well, this field has a nice full stand of grain, but there's not very many poor people out there gleaning in it. That owner must be a skinflint." So she looked across the road, and here was a field over here, and it had good grain also, but there were a lot of poor people in that. She said, "You know, that must be a generous owner. I believe I'll take that one." But you know, that was kind of God pushing her that direction, wasn't it? Because she had no idea where to go, but this is God's providence. Don't you know that the angels were leaning over the parapets of heaven? They were looking down on that scene, and with bated breath, they were wondering, what's she going to do? Who's she going to choose? Which one would she choose? And when she chose the field of Boaz, there was a big heave of sigh of relief on the part of the angels as they looked over there. But that was God in the background guiding things, wasn't it? And then we see that Boaz comes out, and he greets his foreman, and he greets his reapers. He says to the reapers, "Lord be with you." They answered, "Lord bless you." And then he asked his foreman, he said, "What girl is this? Who is this?" And he said, "Well, that's the Moabite girl that came back with Naomi out of the land of Moab." And so she says to Boaz, "I pray you let me glean and gather after the reapers." Well, he says, "I'll do better than that." He said, "Don't you go to another field." But he says that I'm going to ensure that you get a good yield every day. I'm going to instruct the young men just to drop some handfuls on purpose. I've got a set of books in my shelves that are called Handfuls on Purpose. And it's got all these outlines for the Bible, the whole Bible, you know. And he says, "I'm going to do that." And it says that whenever you get thirsty, you go and you drink where the young men drink. You get some of their water. And he says, "I want you to come up and have lunch with me. And I'm going to serve you lunch myself." Well, boy, she had become a friend of the Lord of the harvest, hadn't she? I mean, that's the place to be. Friends of the Lord of the harvest. And so he says, that's where we come down to verse 12, the Lord recompense you, recompense your work, and a full reward be given thee of the Lord God of Israel, under whose wings thou hast come to trust. Then she said, let me find favor in thy sight, my Lord, for thou hast comforted me, for thou hast spoken friendly unto thy handmaid, though I be not like unto thy maidens. And so we read how that instead of living on leftovers, Ruth became a friend of the Lord of the harvest, who had gave her generous gifts. So she gleaned in the field until even, verse 17. And she took all of her yield home with her. And her mother-in-law Naomi said, whose field did you glean in today? She said, I gleaned in the field of a man by the name of Boaz. Oh, my daughter, that's good. He's a near kinsman. And, you know, the wheels started turning in the mind of Naomi. Naomi knew about that Levirate law. Now, turn over to Deuteronomy 25, and I want you to look at that with me. It says in chapter 5 of Deuteronomy chapter 25, that if brethren dwell together, and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. But her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty. This was a duty of a husband's brother unto her, but it was not an absolute duty. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of the brother which is dead, that his name shall not be put out of Israel. But there was a right of refusal. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up to the gate under the elders, call a meeting of the city council, and say, my husband's brother refused to raise up his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of my husband's brother. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him and say, they'll put him on the stand. Now, is this your testimony? Is this what you say? And if he says, yes, that's my testimony, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him and publicly humiliate him in the presence of the elders and all the city. She'll take his shoe off his foot, which was a way of humiliating him. We don't relate to that anymore as much to those kinds of things today. And she would spit in his face and say, so shall it be done unto the man that will not build up his brother's house, and his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. So that's what the law was. Now, with that in mind, Naomi's wheels began to start turning. She thought, I'm going to get Ruth all fixed up. And so we come to chapter 3. And she says, Ruth, she says, my daughter, shall I not seek rest for thee that it may be well with thee? Is not Boaz one of our near kinsmen? Now I tell you what you do. She says, you wash yourself and you perfume yourself. And you put on that party dress that you wore back whenever you were courting Mahlon, my son, back in those days when you were going out with him. And tonight, she says, after the work has been done and they've retired for the night, this man will not go home, but he'll stay down there at the threshing floor. And she says, you slip in there and you uncover his feet and you slide under there, and whenever he asks you what you desire, then you make your request, would he do the part of a near kinsman? Well, it came to pass that that's what happened, and this was, there's no immodesty on the part of Ruth. In fact, she's a very virtuous woman. And so about midnight, the man woke up and there was a strange woman at his feet. He was afraid. You better be afraid when there's a strange woman at your feet. That's the time to fear. So he says, who are you? And she answered, verse 9, I am Ruth, your handmaid. Spread therefore thy skirt over thine handmaid, for thou art a near kinsman. She's saying, please marry me. Please perform the rite of a near kinsman. And he said, why, blessed be you. He said, you could have had the young men, you could have run off after them, you could have run off these young dudes, but you didn't do that. He says, now I'll do all that you require. He says, all the city knows you're a virtuous woman. But he said, now I must tell you that there is one other man that's closer in kinship than I am, and so we'll have to decide what he wants to do first. And if he gives up his right, then I'll guarantee you I'll take care of you. And said, in the meantime, you just stay here until daybreak, and then you leave before dawn so that the gossip doesn't get around, you know, Bethlehem, because it's a small place and everybody knew everything about everybody. Anybody grew up like that? I grew up in downtown East Texas, outer Texas, and everybody knew about everybody, you know, whenever I was growing up in the 50s. And so he said, you wait, but you go out early, and says, give me your veil, and I'm going to fill that veil up with grain, and then you go back. And in the morning, I'm going to call a business meeting. Now, did you ever have a business meeting? You know, anybody ever been parts of business meetings? When I was a boy, we used to have business meetings at home. My father, whenever I'd do something out of line, my father would make the motions, and I'd carry them out. You know what I mean? And so, I only had 4,000 or 5,000 equipment when I was growing up. Not too many. But my brother, he got away with murder. He was little. But at any rate, Dad always held me responsible for everything. But that's another story. We're going to have a business meeting here, and we're going to see if the states settle. So, Boaz gets up, goes to the gate, sits down, calls town council meeting. He says, we've got a legal matter here to settle. And so he got 10 men of the elders of the city, 10 councilmen, to come sit down here. You're going to be my witnesses. And so he says, I am therefore making a public proclamation that I would like to buy all that pertains to Ruth and her dead husband. And so there is another man here, and he's a closer kinsman. What is your pleasure? Well, the man says, I'll tell you what, I believe I'd like to exercise the right to that land. Now, the land could only be sold until the year of Jubilee. But that was every 50 years. So, I mean, you know, if you got it early after the first Jubilee, before the next Jubilee came along, it might as well be yours forever because you're not going to farm it longer than 50 years. Anybody in here farming? Got any educated folks here, any farmers? You're not going to farm any longer than 50 years. So, if you bought it in the middle, then, you know, you wouldn't get the 25 years out of it. Now, if the owner could come up and redeem it, then they would subtract the number of years left from the Jubilee, or actually from the sale of the price, and they would give back that part of the money, and it could be redeemed. That's another story. But he says, I believe I'd like to have that piece of land. And so Boaz says, all right, but I want you to know that when you take the land, you must also redeem Ruth as well. Well, that was a deal breaker. He said, I've already got a family. I've already got kids. It would mar my, it would fragment my inheritance up too much. I believe I'll go ahead and pass. And so, to seal the deal, they took a shoe off. He took off his shoe and handed it to Boaz. That's how they seal contracts. Now, this is not the same thing as that public humiliation over in Deuteronomy 25. This is just the way they seal contracts. Did you know that actually the Jews, you know, they get so snickery about everything. They have rules about everything. They actually finally said, you know, that just an ordinary shoe wouldn't qualify. So they had to have this special shoe, you know, that they had to use for stuff like that. That's why Jesus, you know, said, you have so many rules, you have so many commandments. And you Pharisees have just made the law of God of none effect with all your rules. But anyhow, so the deal was sealed. And here was the Boaz shoe deal. A man plucked off his shoe, gave it to his neighbor. This was the testimony in Israel. And that's the way it went down. So now there's going to be wedding bells in Bethlehem. And we see that Boaz then said, your witnesses, I purchased Ruth, the wife of Mahlon, to be my wife. And I've also bought the inheritance, the estate. Your witnesses, they said, we're witnesses. And they said, verse 12, let thy house be like the house of Perez, whom Tamar bare to Judah. And so Boaz, verse 13, took Ruth, and she was his wife, and she had a son. And this son's name was going to be Obed. And Obed is going to be the father of Jesse. And Jesse is going to be the father of David. And this is the first mention of David that we have in the Bible. Now let's wrap up here because time is just about gone. Well, first of all, we see that Naomi was blessed She was taken care of in her old age. She became the nurse to the little boy. And then Ruth became mama, and she had this little boy, and this little boy became a blessing. You know, what if Ruth had not gone to the right field? There'd have been no wise men coming to Bethlehem, would there? You see how all this fit together? And so, they lived in this great estate, in the house of Boaz. Do you ever wonder what happened to the house of Boaz? Well, if you go over to 2 Samuel, you read that David, on his way back from the rebellion after Absalom had been killed, there was an old man who was 80 years old. And that was old in that day. That's even old in our day, isn't it? Well, it's not as old as it used to be. But we find out that old Barzillai befriended David. And when he was coming back across the Jordan to go back to Jerusalem after he'd been in exile, he said to the old man, "You come go with me and I'll take care of you in your old age." And old Barzillai said, "No," he said, "I'm too old." He said, "Take my boy. If you want to honor somebody, honor him." And so we read in 2 Samuel chapter 19 and verse 37 that, "Behold thy servant Chimham, let him go over with you." And verse 40 says, "So the king went on to Gilgal, and Chimham went on with him." So time marches by. Long time passes by. And we read over in Jeremiah chapter 41 that the city of Jerusalem has been taken. The Babylonians have captured it. There's a group of men that are going to go down to Egypt. But they're going to gather at the inn of Chimham. And so what that tells us is in Jeremiah chapter 41, and let's see, I think it's over about verse 17, "And they departed and dwelt in the habitation of Chimham, which is by Bethlehem, to go to enter into Egypt." So over at the inn of Chimham is where they're going to gather now. Well, the old ancestral house of Boaz and Ruth had now become a hotel for strangers. It was an inn. And guess what? We read that a time marched by again. Some over 400 years passed again. And there was a young man and a young woman. And he was trying to find a place for his wife to stay. His wife was going to have a baby. And he ran all over the city of Bethlehem like a chicken with his head cut off, trying to find somebody that would give him a room. And the Bible says that all of them were full. Said, "You didn't make a reservation. Sorry." And there was no room for them in the inn. And do you know whose inn that was? It was the inn of Chimham. It was the inn of Boaz and Ruth. It was the ancestral home. It's the place where the Church of the Nativity today sits over the top of, that's adjacent to the shepherd's field, which is the very field where Ruth went out and gleaned. Now, we read the latter part of Ruth, and it says that these are the generations of Perez. And it begins, "Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron Ram, and Amminadab, and Nashon, and Salmon, and Boaz, and Obed, and Jesse, who is the father of David the king." We have started with an illegitimate child, Perez, and we're now ending with a king. David was the 10th from Perez. Why couldn't Saul's dynasty have been established? Because it wasn't time for God's king, because Jesse was only the 9th generation, and an illegitimate child could not enter the congregation of the Lord until the 10th generation. David was the 10th. And so it had to wait on David. And when David came, it was David that God says, "I will make a covenant with you and with your house forever." Well, that's a wonderful little story that we have in the book of Ruth. And you know, there's a lot of lessons here that I suppose one of them is God is able to bring sweetness out of bitterness. He's able to take this sour things of life, the unpleasant things of life, and bring sweetness. God's able to take an old life and exchange a new life for it. Naomi gave her old life up for a new life, didn't she? I gave him my old tattered garments. He gave me a robe of pure white. I'm feasting on manna from heaven, and that's why I'm happy tonight. Anybody ever sing that song?
Amen.
That's an old one, isn't it? The windows of heaven are open. The blessings are falling tonight. There's joy, joy, joy in my heart since Jesus made everything right. I gave him my old tattered garments. He gave me a robe of pure white. I'm feasting on manna from heaven, and that's why I'm happy, and that's why I'm happy, and that's why I'm happy tonight. So, that's a lesson that we can get out of this. Also, God honors those that take care of business the proper way, don't they? Boaz, he was an honorable man. He was a gentleman, wasn't he? He could have taken advantage of that situation. Some men, they find a woman laying at her feet in the middle of the night. They might not have been as gentlemanly as Boaz. But he did it the right way. And God blessed that. God honored that. Well, I've gone over time. I'm sorry. Eric, I better give this back to you. That'll be it for Ruth. And I guess next week we'll get back into the Gospel of Matthew. Okay? All right. See you then. God bless you.